Welcome, everyone, to We Have Issues, our weekly gay comic book podcast.
Yes.
That opens the vault, feels the boom, weathers the aftershock, and marvels at every single one of you beautiful NBs out there. I'm your host, Keith, and I'm joined by my stalwart pansexual sidekick, who is always at my side, who Sway.
Yes, I'm back. I danced my butt off. I feel so much better. I'm ready to talk about comics.
Hell yeah. Welcome to Pride Month, everybody.
Happy Pride.
We fucking love Pride. So, yeah, just enjoy your month. It's our month for us to do what we want with. Fuck the haters. As always, of course, we're here to talk about comics, not necessarily sexual proclivities, but we will go ahead and talk about that a bit, as always. But let's talk about some news first. I don't have a ton of news. It's actually a really light news week. First thing is an announcement from AWA. And I'm really intrigued.
Okay.
It's a new 6-issue limited series launching in August from AWA. The art's by ACO, the ink's by David Lorenzo, colors by Marcelo Maiolo, and letter by Sal Cipriano. It's called The Madness, and it's written by J. Michael Straczynski.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. I don't buy AWA books, but JMS, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think I had picked up a book from his that I was trying out at first. Was it him? It had to have been, but it's like people just like spontaneously got powers. One of those plots. But damn, that's pretty solid.
It's also, this is the Josue part of the pitch. I'll send you a link really quick so you can check it out. They have an artist, Chris Ferguson, and a couple other artists who are doing variant covers homaging different punk rock bands.
Oh, no shit.
Including Black Flag, The Cramps, The Sex Pistols, Descendants, Misfits, and Flipper.
Oh, God. Okay. These
I
are
want the
all
Black Flag
really
cover
cool.
So bad.
The Black Flag one is awesome. The Descendants one is really, really cool. I actually really like the Misfits one, just because like it's the Fiend, but yeah. It's like, ooh, it's like the sinisterness is cranked up, and I actually really like how dark it is.
Yeah, that's really cool. If I can find the Black Flag one, I'll probably buy this book. So
honestly, I might take the Cramps one too. That face is actually really perfect.
I don't hate the Sex Pistols one either, actually. It's so good. Yeah, anyways, that's cool. I'm really excited about that. Another bit of indie news. Scott Snyder, his series Barnstormers is going to be getting a print release from Dark Horse, and is going to have new artwork from Fabio Moon and Tula Lotte. So that's kind of cool. I like a little bit of Dark Horse news. Just wanted to throw that out there. Next up. Oh boy. So we talked about the Eisners. Oh boy. Okay. So there are books in the Eisners that me and Josue are not familiar with. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the ones I knew nothing about. And this is writer/artist Thomas Woodruff, who did the graphic novel Francis Rothbart, The Tale of the Fastidious Feral. That was incredibly offensive, apparently. Oh. And since I never heard of it, I didn't know. As a white guy who basically used a lot of like tribal and negative tropes for native people to write this book. And he got nominated for a bunch of Eisners. He has removed himself from consideration for the Eisners, which, first of all, good, but bad because he had to remove himself. Oh. Like, he had to volunteer to step down as a nomination. The Eisners didn't remove him.
Right, right.
So that's still kind of like, eh. He was nominated for Best Graphic Novel or Graphic Album, Best Publication Design, Best Painter Multimedia, and Best Letterer. So,
dang.
Yeah, so that's fucked up. I'm glad that was resolved in a way that the Eisners didn't have to fucking do anything, I guess. So whatever. But happier news. Let's talk about some DC stuff.
Cool.
We say goodbye to a beloved friend, or at least a beloved friend of mine, Josue. I don't think was much of a fan. The CW DC universe is officially over with the end of The Flash.
Oh, it's finally over. Okay, dang.
Yeah. Rest in peace, old friend. Do you know how many episodes there were in the CW DC verse altogether?
I know 9 seasons, but then CW seasons can go on for forever, so no.
like with every show, like Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow. Oh, so
yeah, the CW verse.
Yeah.
How many?
699.
Oh.
One more episode. Just one to make it 700.
Dang.
You bastards. So I loved the CW shows. I didn't like Supergirl season one, but after that, it was probably my favorite, to be honest, besides nice. Legends of Tomorrow, of course. But other than that, I really, really enjoyed it. It's really great. And it was kind of heartbroken to see The Flash end because it was actually pretty good. I really liked it, and especially because we're getting a shitty Flash movie. It makes me appreciate the show so much more. So, yeah, unfortunate. And then the other DC news I have is there's some rumors, and I normally don't comment on rumors, but again, I like if it's a legit source, I'll mention it. And this is coming from Variety, that a soap star from The Bold and the Beautiful named Pearson Fode is reportedly in the running to be the new Superman.
Oh, ooh.
For Superman okay. Legacy.
Uh-huh.
And let me show you what this pretty boy looks like. He's a cleaner cut version of a pop star that I adore. I probably don't need to show you.
Yeah, no, he's handsome. I can definitely see a Superman out of him.
Yeah. So I'm here for that. I think that's a great idea. I like that James Gunn, you know, he uses his friends a lot, but he also is not afraid to take a shot on an unknown. So that's really, really cool. So yeah, maybe we'll see. It's a rumor right now. I'm not reporting this news, I promise.
Before we move on, going back to the CW verse, one of these, because I fell off like so forever ago, but one of these I actually did find interesting, like when it happened. Did you like John Cryer as Lex Luthor?
Oh fuck yeah!
Because that was always like such a good pick for me, like too, as like I would just want to see his scenes, a compilation of just his scenes, because like that was such a great pick.
He was great, but I was here for Lena, man.
Okay.
She was great. And Melissa Benoist is one of the most beautiful women on the planet. And that show was just so good. It had a real heart to it. Like, it's sweet. And Legends of Tomorrow is still the best. Still throwing that out there.
Nice.
All right. Marvel news. We got some teasers about Moon Knight 25, and now we know a bit more.
Ooh.
We are getting the comic book debut of Layla El Fawali.
Yes.
She stole my heart. When the Moon Knight show was on,
I
was immediately in love with her. Like, she's just incredible. I don't know what it is about curly, dark-haired women playing characters in Egyptian stories like The Mummy. But yes, I just fall in love with them immediately. They're just amazing. She's going to be in the book. Go ahead.
When I go LARPing and the way I can position my sword and my back with, on this, like, because I wear this BMX, like, breast harness, and it's like the green for my collar costume, but the way I can just like tuck it in, like, and the back part holds just like the tip of the sword up against like my back, it just like perfectly hides away. But when I unsheathe it, it's literally like the Layla unsheathing when she does like the wings. It's literally that every time. It's in my head.
Dope. So amazing. I love it. Very excited for that. We've really been loving the Moon Knight run, so it's just amazing. So
cool.
And this one I have to send to Josue because it made me laugh. It's a podcast like catchphrase, so we're going to talk about it. Someone did a Wreck Rap cosplay.
No, really? Oh my god, I love them. Where is it? Show it to me now.
Send you the link.
Load, please load. Oh, that's awesome.
For those who don't know, Wreck Rap is the demon version of Spider-Man. It's Parker backwards. Wreck Rap is the best, and it's the best. I love it so much.
Yo, I tweeted out once, but can we please get a Wreck Rap and Spider Boy team up? Like, they're both just out there lost in New York City, and they have to find each other.
Yes, excellent. I want him to run into Maddie and just be like Maddie's like Deadpool, just annoy Maddie all the time.
That'd be great.
So, yeah. So that's it for Marvel news of this week. However, I'm checking in with Josue about one thing that happened last week because he wasn't here to talk about it. Josue, this year at San Diego Comic-Con, they're doing a real live Hellfire Gala and we can't go because we're poor.
Oh, God. That really sucks to be so poor, Z's. Fuck. Oh, that's so good. God, but what
attendees are encouraged to dress up in their best superpowered style and be sure to bring their mutant fashion A game to the green carpet.
Oh my god. to just go in perfect, just like and just look absolutely fabulously perfect. And then just to actually be at a Comic Con, because you know some suckers are just going to come in their actual superhero cosplay costumes and to just make fun of them from a distance, like for like the first year of the Hellfire Gala, all in good fun. But to just do that, I love it.
Among the experiences being offered by the Comic Con version of the Hellfire Gala are the Green Lagoon. Inspired by Krakoa's famous watering hole and karaoke hotspot.
Oh my god! I'm so pissed.
Yeah, and the Hellfire Ballroom, and but the Green Lagoon. We know what matters. So yeah. I had to bring that up with you. Sorry. So that's it for news. But there's a couple more things I want to talk to Josue about. First of all, Josue, how did you like Guardians of the Galaxy 3?
Man, it was very, very well done. Are we okay with spoilers at this point? Since
yeah, it's like a month on.
A new Marvel movie just came out, so yeah, it's okay to talk about these spoilers now. Fuck, I really liked it. The only gripe I had, the main gripe I had with it was all of his other scenes with everyone were fine. It was just like Star-Lord just came off a little too gaslighty after a while, like with Gamora. Like, it's It was just like, we get it. But at the same time, it's like, bro, you got blipped for like 5 years and you're a spaceman. Like, I'm sure you have way more stuff to catch up on instead of being hung up on this one person.
How it was called out, though.
Yeah, oh, for sure. She was fantastic. But after a while, I was just kind of like,
Nebula called him out. And it's just like
him and yeah. And even Gamora clapping back where it's just like, bro, like just like chill the fuck out. But it was just like as like for like the character, it's just like. Almost like he could have just talked about anything else after a while.
I do like in the last third of the movie, he did kind of drop it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. That's what I'm saying. So but it's like
he definitely grew, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like he begged her to stay at the end or anything like
no, that. And no. And I'll definitely get to that. Every flashback scene was a guaranteed cry. I didn't, I was like, God damn it. I feel like the third time I was like, well, I cried the first two times. Like, surely this one won't. And god damn it, six guinea pigs did not help. thinking about them back at home, the Rocket story was fucking awesome. It was very, very well done.
I saw a theory online that the reason Rocket has always been obsessed with stealing robotic body parts is because it reminds him of his friends. Because
everyone else, yeah.
And I'm just like,
it's such a good touch, such a good detail. he was awesome. In the end, I for sure I get that he's also part a quarter celestial. But I for sure thought that the head inflating that was it for Star-Lord.
Liz gasped.
I was horrified. But then you also have Adam Warlock coming in as Adam in the very fucking pose, which I really appreciated for all its blasphemy. So I guess that had going for it too. But holy shit, like you don't come back from that. And also thought it was gonna be that was in his James Gunn way where it's just like he loves to kill his darlings, but like to hold off this death from like the first movie when he was the first time he was supposed to freeze up in space. I thought it was gonna be like a whole full circle for that, but no. But in the end,
plus he would have gone the same way Yondu did.
Yeah, that's true too.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh no.
But in the end, how it did end, I was actually happy that the Guardians didn't just go their separate ways because of a big climactic death over one of them. It was such a music focused trilogy that I liked that it actually felt like a band disbanding in the end. It was just like it was such a different feel for it, and I really appreciate it. And Dog Days Are Over will forever make me cry now. I can't listen to it the same anymore. It was such a beautiful moment in the end.
That was my favorite instance of ever hearing that song, and I love that song.
I know. When he just
thinks it. I don't know if you saw the video of Florence crying watching it.
I haven't seen it yet. You told me about it, but I haven't seen it. it was, you had warned me about it. It's like a slight warning on it, and I had completely forgotten about it. And then as soon as you start, you hear like the perfect melody, and it's like I get the subtle gas that I did. And then even then, like during the movie, and I was so happy. The mid credits scene was probably arguably my favorite. Not that it's like, Phyla. Oh, I was happy that the movie was over, but
Phyla,
fucking Vel, Phyla fucking Vel showing up mid movie. I was thinking, it's like, man, like however this movie ends, like whoever dies or whatever happens, we're gonna have to like crank it up, like whether they do the king thing or not. We're gonna have to like elevate the MCU, like where when are we gonna bring Phyla Vel and like and Moondragon? So that seeing her as a kid was the coolest fucking thing.
Yeah. I loved it. I loved the movie. It was fucking great. It wasn't as good as 2 to me, because 2 is still probably my favorite Marvel movie.
Okay. Okay.
But
the hallway sequence was fucking awesome.
Oh my God.
It was so
just
cool.
To the little touch of it's the entire Guardians team working together.
Yes.
Except for Gamora. Because she's not a part of the team. It really kind of like emphasized that. I thought it was great. Nebula probably stole the movie for me.
She was really cool. Yeah.
She was great. I 100% ship Peter and Nebula now, because I would like as that started, I was like, Nebula's in love with him before they even said anything. Uh-huh. And then there was the whole awkward line of like, and he's like, I don't know how black your eyes are. I was just like, it's happening. Like, so Drax got a great finish, got a great ending.
I agree.
It was as good of an ending as you could get for that character. I don't think it could get any better. My only problem with Adam Warlock is we didn't get enough of him.
My thing with Adam Warlock, like, with, to not sound like just like, oh, it was such a disappointment, but it was like, honestly, like the way he was propped up for like, we're gonna be seeing him later. The way I see him for this movie, just like, not even like to forgive it, he felt like such a like a Marvel first appearance. Like anybody that if it. It's such an insignificant moment in a first appearance in an old throwback issue, but now we just fucking love him. But we go back to like that first instance of being like, because it's how goofy it was. That's how I kind of took away from Adam Warlock.
Yeah, I like Will Poulter a lot. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, he was awesome.
So I really enjoyed him in that. Obviously, we got to talk about the High Evolutionary being one of the best Marvel villains ever.
Yeah, just straight up a piece of shit to just hate on. He was great.
He's not likable or redeemable in any way.
No.
And which is what they've been doing. He's the first MCU villain to be like that, really.
Right. Like, they do this quality, just like, oh, like maybe it's not so bad. Like, and so and for some movies, like, they work really well. But holy fuck, this one's just like, yo, let's just fucking shit on this guy. Like, yeah, he was great.
And then I love that Cosmo is just there. Like, they never explained it, and Liz in the theater went, is Cosmo just here now?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, awesome. Pretty much, you don't need an explanation, shut up. Like, so I could have done without the Sylvester Stallone parts, because it felt like, I don't know, a lot, but that's the only thing. I mean, especially because they had to recast the one character, the head that was Miley Cyrus.
Oh, Miley Cyrus, yeah.
I was just like, okay, what was the point of this? But get Michael Rosenbaum, yeah, the guy that played Lex Luthor in Smallville. Mm-hmm. He played the crystal guy, so he always gets a paycheck when this happens, so I'm part of that.
Sick. I like
him. So, but yeah, glorious movie. Absolutely glorious movie. I'm curious to see what they do next, because as we know, Star-Lord will return.
Right.
So, interesting. And I remember I said the Mantis thing. She's going to go off and do something. That was my prediction.
And we kind of know her story, what could happen, where we could go, what events could happen.
She was also great in this movie.
Yeah. Oh my God. Mantis falling, landing so brutally every time was so funny. And it was just, God, it was so horrific to watch too.
The Mantis, like, you know how Mantis was a little bit insane in this movie compared to the others?
Yeah.
That's Mantis in the game.
I love it. And which she kind of is like right now in the comics too.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of like, I'll fucking rip your eyes out, but I'm nice. It's just like, what the fuck? And then we have to like, obviously we're not going to talk about this movie the entire time, but we could. But like, how do I put this? First of all, do you feel it's an appropriate end for these characters?
at the very least, a solid pause. Yeah, I guess I should say
a solid end for some of these characters.
Yeah.
Because that's what I kind of figured, they might like write some people out, mm-hmm. you know, bring Phyla and Kraglin and stuff in, which Kraglin was great. So, it didn't feel like an ending to me. It did feel like a pause. I guess that's kind of what I was going towards. Mm-hmm. Is like, maybe that's me being hopeful because I just love them. So,
yeah, no, for sure. There's definitely a lot to love in. Like, there's such a like main roster that it'd be weird to not see them ever again. But like, I think we'll see like the very like the most of them. It really just felt like the band just like, yeah, like taking a pause, like just like going their separate ways, and it's like this new group forms, and yeah, it's. Yeah, we'll see where it goes. But I'm actually excited for this particular future for them.
And last question. How great was the first MCU F-bomb?
Oh my god. The fact that it wasn't like a direction like to a you suck type of like drop. It was just like a perfect frustration. The perfect frustration that delivery to just like, what now? You opened the fucking door. Like, it was so good.
It was so good. I loved it so much. Like, I didn't expect it then, and it happened, and there was like a moment of recognition. I'm like, yes. Like, I was so excited. So,
and especially just like, and you know, like the full context of just like, she's surgically one of the most technologically advanced beings, and she's just like, just the struggle.
Yeah, wonderful. All right. And then, very quickly, and entirely spoiler free because it came out today, give me a very brief impression of the Spider-Verse movie.
I'm reflecting back on it now, and it raised the stakes in a very, very cool way.
Is it very clearly a part one of a part two?
Yes.
That's what I've heard. Okay, good. Cool. Everybody watch it. We'll talk about it next week because I'm watching it this weekend with Manda, who has not seen part one. Manda could not remember what Marvel movie she's seen, and it was very frustrating for me.
I'm so excited for Manda to watch it for the first time. That's so cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's time to talk about some comics, unless you have any other news that I might have missed.
No.
Cool. Well, as always, we start with a wait. We don't have any Boom books this week.
What?
Well, we don't have any Aftershock books.
What?
There's a lot of publishers without books this week. So, first of all, we're going to scout ahead.
Nice.
With Scout Comics. I only have one book from Scout this week, and it actually didn't come out this week. I have a spoiler-free preview of By the Horns Dark Earth number 9.
That's cool.
There's only 3 issues left. Story and direction by Marquise Inasso. Art and lettering designed by Jason Moore. Colors by Stephen Cannon. It's very good. Like, I mean, it's hard not to spoil, like, when you do spoiler-free reviews. You know what I mean? Like, but it's really cool. If you like By the Horns, it's more of what you want. There's an unveiling of a new character that I'm going to snip this and send it this way while we're talking because I just need him to see it. That's just, the character design is absolutely fantastic. There is one of the things I really like about them is the world. We've talked about that in the past, the world building. And they introduce a new mode of travel on the last page, and it looks insane. And just the way they do things, it's just so much fun. And it makes it really enjoyable to read. And mm-hmm. to get lost in a world, which I really enjoy. But yeah, like I said, if it's something that... If you've liked it so far, keep reading it. I don't know what to tell you there. But if you haven't, by all means, read By the Horns. It's great. I just sent you that character design so you can give me your feedback on it. Yeah.
Wait, this is from By the Horns?
Yeah, doesn't it look like some shit that Val Halverson would design?
That is like, so dope.
Right? Like, I love it so much, dude.
That's awesome. Just, I fucking love it.
It's just so cool, yeah. But yeah, it ends really well. But yeah, there's like a new mode of transport that's very By the Horns that I absolutely love. And yeah, the bad guys are circling. It's been really, really good. So that's it for By the Horns. I just wanted to quickly check in with them. So next up, we're going to go over to IDW. And I got one book from IDW. And I didn't know this was coming out this week. So I was very excited to pick it up. It is The Rocketeer.
Nice.
A one-shot from The Rocketeer. Now, I read The Last Rocketeer Mini and really enjoyed it, so I wanted to make sure to pick this one up, too. There's three stories in here, so I'll go through the creative team. Writers are Danny Bilson, Paul DeMeo, Kelvin Mao, and Robert Windham. Art is by Adam Hughes, Craig Cermak, and the final story, the art is by Jay Lee.
Whoa.
Letters by Karen Bates, colors by Laura Martin, colors by June Chung, letters by Karen Bates and Crank. This is a fun one-shot because, like I said, it's three stories, but the first two stories are crossovers. So in the first one, you find out that as a younger man, he met Amelia Earhart.
Huh.
And basically, when her plane went down, he searched for her and he found like a symbol thing that showing that she had been somewhere. That's basically it. It wasn't like really super elaborate, but it was really cool. And the second one is a crossover with, I'm pretty sure, Indiana Jones. So like he's like giving a speech and Nazis attack and stuff. So, but the last one is just a very brief story about him and Betty. And again, it's Jay Lee art. So you get this absolutely gorgeous shot of him and Betty Page.
Okay, yeah, that is a great page.
Jay Lee's just one of the best. Like, just look at this shot of the Rocketeer itself.
Oh, it's like, yeah, that's really
so
well
good,
done.
Dude. I love it. So check, if you guys are Rocketeer fans or you've never heard of him and you want to check him out, this is the time. Pick this up. It's really, really, really good. So next up, we're going to talk about Dynamite. And I got Gargoyles number 6. This one was really, really good. Written by Greg Weisman, illustrated by George Kambadeus, one of my favorite artists right now. Letter by Jeff Eckelberry. And it's basically Goliath is in prison. He's framed, but he's basically like doing the whole like I'm the Daredevil thing. Basically, I'm going to stay in prison. I'm going to let justice be served. Don't break me out. They try to break him out. He's like, no, leave me. So it's really interesting because like Brooklyn is the leader of the Gargoyles now, and they're not quite the same dynamic because it's not him. And there's also the gang war going on. It's really, really interesting. Everything is all kind of coming together. I also should point out that I got a variant cover, and I love this cover.
Oh. Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah. It's like a dark cover. Like, uh-huh. She looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just looks so pretty. It's very Beauty and the Beast. Even more so than their dynamic usually is. Yeah, I love it. This is the C cover, in case anyone's wondering, which is by Lucio Perillo. So, yeah. Great stuff. Yeah, that's it for Dynamite. Now let's move on to The Vault. First of all, we got Door to Door Night by Night number 6. We've already reviewed this as a spoiler, or at least I did, as a spoiler-free version. I really, really liked this book. This is a great issue. It focuses on another character. So they've been doing that really great thing of focusing on each character one by one, kind of.
Yeah.
There's and the big previous, guy. Yeah, it's the big guy. And man, I loved it is all I will say. I thought it was really, really well done. And yeah, I just highly recommend it. It's been a great series so far. I showed you a shot from it before.
Yeah.
Where they are basically they're fighting mer people, which is kind of like one of your weaknesses, like me. Where it's like water people, you're like, ooh, you know what I mean? So, yeah, really, really cool. And I think this is the end of the first arc, so we might need to wait a little bit longer for something else to pop up. But yeah, really, really good. Josue wasn't able to pick it up, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you'll catch up because you've really enjoyed this book. So
it is one of my, for sure, my sleeper favorites, for sure.
Yeah. Next up is Barbaric Hell to Pay. Number 4.
Speaking of favorites.
written by Michael Marici, art by Nathan Gooden, colored by Addison Duke, and letter by Jeff Campbell. This makes the preview version of the next book make a lot more sense now that I've read it. The Queen of Swords one.
Right.
Deadheart and the barbarian Owen are trapped in hell, and the rest of the group is trying to get them out. Long story short, they're able to do so. But there's a sacrifice that has to be made. And it's really great. It also explains, you might remember me telling you that for some reason Deadheart's wielding like a chauvinist sword that's like talking shit to her the entire time.
Right.
It explains where that sword came from, and it's great. And it does explain what happens in the next one, the team up. So it's gonna be more interesting, I think. I like it because I honestly, because I read Queen of Swords first, yeah, it did kind of spoil for me where this was going, who's gonna hang out with who, and I just like, now that I've read it, I really enjoy it, and it makes sense, and I think it's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the, remember the chick with the chain tattoos?
Yes.
Her, the assassin chick from Harvest Blades.
Yeah.
And Deadheart are now like a crew rolling around.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's what Queen of Swords is going to be about. So.
Oh, that's badass.
Yeah, so really, really good. I love this book series. It's just been fucking amazing. And so make sure to pick up Queen of Swords when it comes out. This is the end of this run, but there'll be more because it's barbaric. It's way too popular. So.
It really is.
All right. So that ends the vault for me. So we are going to go ahead and move on to Image Comics. Starting off with Torrent number 4. This is the one about the superhero girl who whose husband was killed when her secret identity got out. And it's written by Mark Guggenheim, illustrated by Justin Greenwood, colored by Rico Renzi, and lettered by Keith Wood. And it's really great because she basically goes on a Punisher-style spree of killing people. Because she's like, I'm going to kill every single person that works for this bad guy. And then their version of the Justice League is like, you can't do that, like, yeah, basically. And so there's Superman tries to stop her, and she has a thing to stop him. And it becomes very clear she's prepared to take any one of them out if she needs to. She has something for each one.
Nice.
And it's really cool. She goes through them pretty quickly. Gets hurt, obviously, but, you know, goes through them. And I really liked it. And it ended on kind of a cliffhanger because you might remember from the first issue, her secret identity got out because they caught her sidekick and tortured him, and he gave them the information.
Yeah.
I thought he was dead. They just revealed he's in a coma. Or he was in a coma in a hospital, and he just woke up.
Fuck.
So she's going to be pissed. She's killing people, even remotely related to the dude that killed her kid, her husband.
And then
now this dude's like, I'm the one that ratted you out. Like, I can't wait. It's going to be great. Next up is a book that Josue needs to pick up. It's going to be a contender for the end of the year. And it's issue 2. I've already talked about issue 1. Deep Cuts.
Oh, no shit. Okay.
So the first one was about the kid from the South that played the clarinet. Wanted to be a blues or jazz musician. There's this whole thing. This one is about a woman in Chicago 1928 who's writing for a Broadway musical and needs to write a jazz song and doesn't know anything about jazz and has 48 hours to write it. And it's done so well, and it ties directly in to the last one in like a weird little side way. Like, they're in the same universe. It's very much acknowledged.
Okay.
So really, really cool. I should point out the creative team words by Kyle Higgins, words by Joe Clark, pencils and inks by Helena Macellis, colors by Igor Monte, and letter by Hassan Osmani El Hao. The art in this book is fucking beautiful. And I absolutely love it. I'll give you like an example.
Oh, that is such a pretty book.
And see, because it's the 20s, they give her the real like 20s look.
Yeah, yeah.
Like very Gatsby. And it's just her on like a 2-day bender learning all about jazz from all these different people. And she ends up writing a song but the musical fails, someone else records the song and it becomes famous and everybody forgets she's the one that wrote it. So she never gets famous. And they actually got musicians to record the song. So you can actually go on Apple Music and listen to the song.
I love this.
I knew it. I knew how to hook you. I know exactly what to do to hook you.
Oh my God, so good.
It also has, at the back of the book, sheet music.
What? Oh, wow. Oh, that's so fucking cool. I love this. Yeah. I do need to fucking get this.
And it's a big, thick book. It's got a spine.
So. Yeah, no, I mean, I do see them at the shop, but it's just like, I just glance over them, but I definitely need to pick through them. It's like I can't get my hopes up for new books I can't even fucking get right now, but that is a good one for sure to look out for.
It'll be a great trade one day.
So. Yeah.
I like Higgins being able to take a break from the Radiant Black stuff and just doing something different.
For sure.
So, really cool. So, next up, Local Man number 4. This book is so good. I had to go to 3 stores to get this book, but I knew I wasn't skipping it this week. Created and written by Tim Seeley and Tony Fleeks. Art by Tony Fleeks and Tim Seeley. Colors by Brad Sampson and Felipe Sobrero. And no letters. I guess they handle their own lettering. So this is about the hero that went back to his local town after being, estranged. And it kind of like starts to break into the whole, why are these people being killed? Why are these bad guys being killed? It's obviously not him because he's our point of view character.
Mm-hmm.
But when we find out who it is, it's really interesting. It's really dark and twisted. And I love the way it plays off, that early Image vibe of what a superhero is, but also a really dark perspective of what the reality of that would be.
Mm-hmm.
It does have another backup story on the back, the flip side of the actual Image era, about three of the heroes being trapped on a planet together and having to survive. And it's just, it's interesting. It's a mystery, so I can't spoil. But it was done really well, and it's not over.
Oh, nice.
So, we'll see. It's going to be really, really good. So, and my final book of the week from Image is World Tree number 2.
Nice.
This one's messing with my normal, man.
I'm 20 issues over into the Department of Truth. I've been messed up by this man.
Words by James Tynion IV, art by Fernando Blanco, color by Jordi Belair, and letter by Aditya Bidikar. This is the one about the underweb, mm-hmm. where it's messing with people's heads and twisting them. And there's this mysterious naked woman walking around killing people. It's bizarre. It's so good. Some of the imagery is absolutely insanely just amazing. And just like, there's a great mystery to it, but it's also like a creepy mystery. And like, yeah, I really, really like it. It's just very good. There's so many scenes where like somebody's like searching a house and she's there in the background, mm-hmm. and they just don't see her. And I'm like, she's fucking right behind you. Like, and she doesn't kill them. She's just standing there. And I'm like, what? Like, it's insane. Like, such a great book. That's another one I had to go to another shop for. So yeah, definitely worth it.
Nice.
And finally, I'm going to talk about a book that came out last week, because I did not get a chance to read it last week, but I got it this week, and it's one of our favorites, so I'm talking about it. What's the Furthest Place from Here, number 13. Written by Tyler Boss and Matthew Rosenberg, letter by Hassan Atsmani El Hao, and colors by Roman Titoff with Shy Cheeks assisting. It follows Alabama and Lafayette, which are two of the original characters.
Yeah. Finally back around. Cool.
Yes. And they're basically in a habitat that's a prison, but it's a zoo, basically. And they're being kept there. And this takes place over an extended period of time. I don't know how long. They start counting days and they lose track. And it's about the people imprisoning them, breaking them. It's a heavy read. It's really good, but it's probably the heaviest read of the series so far.
Wow. Okay.
It's brutal, mm-hmm. brutal, brutal. And there's a lot of moments like false hope moments that are just absolutely just, great book. I just had to mention it, even though it came out last week, because holy fuck, it messed with me.
Yeah, next time I'm in the shop, it's the one I'm eyeing for. Speaking of last week books that I also got to read, I definitely need to listen to the last week's episode to get your actual reaction, but Supermassive 2 was fucking awesome.
It was great.
Was so fucking good. It's like the quick crossover between three out of like the people in the Massiverse, but then the surprise fourth. Oh, dude, I fucking cheered, dude.
Me too. I was like, what? And I went back a page, like, what? Like,
it was so badass. It was just like, it sucks. It's like, oh, like, you think it was the staff that was giving you magic? And it's like, oh, well, okay. Boom, boom. Oh, dude, it was awesome. I fucking love the Massiverse.
So that means this power exists on this Earth as well as the other Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, baby. I loved it. It was so good. Yeah. And then, oh, while you're here, what did you think of Radiant Pink?
Man, what a solid ending. Holy shit. Like, when she went full crazy, like, when she killed those two people, it was like, oh, they're fucking dead. And, like, all in the name for, like, for her, for them. Like, God, it was so fucking toxic. It was a solid fucking finish. I really, really enjoyed it, how it went. It was just bittersweet. It was just kind of sad because it wasn't, like, the happy ending. Like, not a completely happy ending, but for sure, like, those hard lessons learned. Like, it was just, like, it was such a relatable book. It's like, I fucking miss streaming, but it's like the sacrifices that need to be made sometimes. It's like, ah, oh, girl, I fucking feel you from the first issue, from the fucking Mario Kart reference to like where we're at now. Like, yo, like they fucking killed it for me, like in the best way.
Yeah, it was really, really great. All right, awesome. Well, let's move on to our next publisher, which is DC. Very small DC week.
Mm-hmm.
I only got three books. I think there were only three books in the entire company this week. So let's talk about them. First up is DC Pride. Woo, DC!
Nice.
Last week, I gave DC a lot of credit because, in my opinion, they had an amazing AAPI month.
Yeah.
Between Spirit World and City Boy and The Vigil, that's three brand new series starring AAPI characters that are all very good. So lots of respect to them. They're the first out of the blocks with their Pride book this year. Did you get a chance to read this?
No, I just glanced over the covers.
So I enjoyed it, and there's a lot of great talent here. I'll go ahead and run them down real quick. Grant Morrison, Hayden Sherman, Marissa Louise, Aditya Bedekar, Leah Williams, Paulina Gonshaw, there we go. Frank Setkovich, Nadia Shamas, Bruca Jones, Tamara Bonvillain, A.L. Kaplan, Aditya Bidikar, Josh Trujillo, Lucas Gattoni, Don Aguillo, Jeremy Holt, Andrew Drillon, Mildred Luis, Ariana Mayer, Rex Ogle, Steven Sadowski, Enrica Aaron Angiolini, there we go, Christopher Cantwell, Skylar Partridge, Derba Kelly, Morgan Martinez, and Nicole Maines, Rye Hickman, Bex Glendinning, and Rusty Glad. I enjoyed it. My only problem with this is it seems like every year we get the same characters in DC Pride.
Mm-hmm.
There are other gay characters in this world. There's a Harley and an Ivy story, and I'm like, okay, at least they put Crush in this time with them. For like an almost like a lesbian couple with a daughter dynamic, which was kind of cute.
Okay.
I really like that. I love Crush. So, and it also makes it canon that Crush and her girlfriend are back together. So thank God.
Oh, okay.
Because that was the one thing I hated was I was like, no. There was an interesting story with Tim and Connor, which I was like, all right, but I mean, Tim was in the last year's, you know, like, okay. There's the new character they introduced in Lazarus Planet Dark Fate, the one from the Flash storyline Circuit Breaker. Okay. And they crossed over with Jess Chambers. So that was a great story. I really, really like that because it's a new character and Jess Chambers. There's Apollo Midnighter. Does that sound familiar? They get trotted out when they need to be trotted out. There's a Spirit World story, which was really cool.
Ooh, cool.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, is there an Alan Scott one?
I think he appears in one of them.
Okay.
There's a Batwoman one, which is part of the Spirit World one.
Okay,
and
cool.
Then there's a Nubia one, and I'm like, we did this last year, guys. Like, I'm just like, okay. Like, and some of these characters, not Nubia, but some of these characters, we only see them during Pride Month.
Yeah.
And I'm not blaming any of the creators working on this book, because it's not their decision, but I wish they wouldn't just trot people out for this kind of stuff. There's also a Catman story, which I loved because I love Catman, and he gets to be a beefcake bisexual boy, and that's fun. But yeah, overall, it was really fine. The only one they trot out is that I am happy to always see is Dreamer, always like a Dreamer story.
Yeah.
But honestly, it's only a 4-issue preview of the upcoming graphic novel, which I'm excited about. So
okay,
it's fine. It wasn't groundbreaking or anything like that. Nothing canon shaking. Yeah, it's fine. The Grant Morrison multiversity stuff was made canon. That happened, so that's cool. But so
oh shit, okay.
Yeah, it's fine. Next up, Power Girl Special number one. It's a one shot.
Yeah.
This was a great book. The art was gorgeous. I loved it. So let's talk about the creative team while I pull it up. And I'm pulling it up. There we go. Written by Leah Williams, of course. Art by Marguerite Sauvage. Colors by Marguerite Sauvage and Marissa Luis. Letters by Becca Carey. So it's kind of like ending the arc of Power Girl's new powers, how she's like got psychic powers.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of closes that arc where she loses the psychic powers, and we discover that like it's almost like they were just gestating inside of her to make a change. And now she has a new power, which is basically like she can punch through like psychic walls and stuff. Like she can like I'm trying to think of the word for it, like astral walls. She can punch through astral walls, the astral plane, which is really cool. I like it. She's not telepathic anymore, which I think is fine. I didn't think it really suited her character all that much compared to something like this.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoyed it. It also dove pretty deeply into her relationships with the Super Family, which I love because she's a very complicated character when it comes to the Super Family. She's not really one of them. And they want her to be, but she doesn't want to be. But at the same time, she'd like to be. It's like this really kind of torn thing.
Yeah.
And specifically her relationship with Kara, which is really interesting. So I really liked it. I thought it was really good. And Marguerite's art is just amazing. Yes. Lee is an incredible writer. I just loved this. It also has a preview of the upcoming Fire and Ice story from Smallville.
Dope.
That is going to be coming up soon. So that was a lot of fun to read as well. So really good stuff. It kind of dives into Ice's weird, like, toxic relationship with Guy Gardner and how she can't, like, how she knows he's bad, but she can't really, like, just let him go. And she keeps like, calling him when she shouldn't and stuff like that. It kind of dives into that. Mm. And Fire is just very much like, fuck Guy Gardner, and punches him every time she sees him. So I like that dynamic. I love them two a lot. And I'm still riding high on Human Target. So, yeah.
Right.
Great stuff. And final DC book of the week is Detective Comics.
Oh, man. The cover alone.
Oh, 72. You want to know a fun fact?
Yeah.
I don't think he appeared in this book.
Oh, really? God damn
unless
it.
Unless I forgot. So, yeah. Unless it was right at the end and I just completely spaced. So, it's kind of like, so we're at the point where everything is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a Dragon Ball Z episode where the time slows to a crawl.
Okay.
So that they can check in with everybody doing everything.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot that happened, but we checked in with almost every character. Written by Ram V, pencils by Ivan Reis and Stefano Raffaelli, inked by Danny Meehy and Stefano Raffaelli, colors by Brad Anser and Lee Luffridge, and letter by Ariana Mayer. Yeah, so basically the whole Bat family is there and working together to stop the bad guys. There is a... It's kind of a very like traditional Batman story where the bad guy reveals, hey, I got bombs all over the place and you don't have time to stop them. And the Bat family has to work to stop them. And there's like a little bit of a trickery in it. And a bomb goes off, I'll tell you that much. And I'm kind of like, oh, what's that mean? So it does kind of end on a big, like high point that I'm not sure of the repercussions of so far.
Ooh, okay.
So I'm not prepared to talk about it too much, but it was pretty good. Nice. Art's really great. Ivan Reis is just a great Batman artist.
Oh, it's on Ivan Reis right now. That's so good.
Yeah. So, yeah, really liked it. But that's it for DC. I'm ready to move on to Marvel.
Yes.
Okay, Marvel Comics. That's where you chime in with whatever you read.
For sure.
I know you did not read Dr. Aphra. So, no. Written by Alyssa Wong, art by Minkyu Jung, color by Rochelle Rosenberg, and letter by Joe Caramagna. Coming out of Hidden Empire, or Crimson Rain. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Aphra is now trying to raid a temple with a Jedi lock on it. So she needs a Jedi who's pure of heart. So who wakes up in a box being kidnapped by Dr. Aphra in her car or in her ship, but Luke Skywalker? She kidnapped Luke Skywalker. So it's going to be a Luke and Aphra team up. And it's great. It's really a lot of fun. They like have to use their individual abilities and work together. And she's still Aphra. She's still like, I'm here to make money. And he's just like, you know, if there's an evil force, I must, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, so like, it's just a fun dynamic. It's nice to see Luke over in this book instead of her normal supporting cast, because they kind of went their own ways after the end of that crossover. So she's kind of on her own again. Mm. But yeah, fun. R2 is also there, oh, of course. Great. But apparently he wouldn't shut up, so Aphra put a locking bolt on him so to shut him off. So I love Aphra so much. Next up, Silver Surfer Ghostlight 4. Written by John Jennings, art by Valentin Delandro, color by Matt Meehan, letter by Joe Sabino. Not much to get into with this one. Again, I would have to explain way too much backstory for the audience to really understand what's going on. It's just a really, really good Silver Surfer story.
Dope.
And it's him fighting AIM. It's got this whole thing where like this town is missing a day of their lives and you find out why. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it was a really traumatic story that was removed from their head. And this bad guy's like, fine, you want your day back, and gives it to them, and now they're all panicking because they think they're like buried under rubble and all this shit.
Oh, fuck.
So it's really interesting. One of the main bad guys makes an offer and becomes whatever this is. That's the only shot we get of it. It's on the final page. So I'm sure we'll get a full reveal in the next issue. But yeah, it's been really, really good. I'm liking it a lot. It's not on the same week as Bloodline this time, so that streak is broken.
Oh.
Because it's been that way since the beginning. But yeah. All right. Josue was unable to read Punisher 12.
I know. I waited. I really, it's like my go-to one.
Hey, Jason Aaron, Jesus Size, Paul Azaceta, colors by Matt Hollingsworth, and letter by Corey Petit. In the last issue, Maria shot Frank in the chest.
Uh-huh.
With the God Killer gun. This takes place immediately after that. Frank is dying. The priestess of the hand has been this little bitch the entire time. Is like, oh, look at you, little bitch. You dying. You ain't the killer. You ain't what I'm looking for. Your own wife killed you, blah, 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 blah. Just talking shit because, you know, Frank's dying. And the priestess pulls up the gun, is going to shoot him in the head. And he's like, he says, not all of it. She's like, what was that? He goes, power. Still have enough for one last name on my list. And takes out the priestess.
Oh, cool.
That's when the Avengers show up and find Frank bleeding out. We get a flashback in that same traditional flashback art style they've been doing. Mm-hmm. With Frank making his first kill after the murders.
Oh.
And so it flashes back to that. Then we cut to Frank in a prison underneath the Sanctum Sanctorum. And all the Avengers have a moment with him, one by one.
Oh, shit.
Trying to determine what to do with him. So Doctor Strange is just like, he actually says, what the hell are we supposed to do with you? They all have their opinions, as you can imagine. Some a bit more final than others. It's like, someone thinks he should die. And Frank is just like, I don't fucking care what you do to me. Just don't let Maria die. And he's like... Dr. Strange is like, she should not be alive. And Frank is, he's like, she's brought back to life. And he's like, basically, you're one to talk, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
That just happened, brother. So basically, Strange revealed they saved him. He gives him the bullets that were removed from his chest. And then we start seeing the Avengers meetings, including Logan. Very first one is Logan Wolverine. He's like, say it, admit you screwed up, give me a reason not to kill you, as his claws in Frank's face. And Frank replies, you do me, better do yourself next, bub. And then Wolverine storms out.
Fuck.
Black Widow talks to him and he's like, yeah, we both operate outside the law, Natasha. I don't want to hear your shit, basically.
Yeah.
Moon Knight comes in and Moon Knight, he doesn't say a word to Moon Knight. Moon Knight has the entire conversation with himself, basically. Oh. And he's like, basically, like, he's the one that's like, I think you can be redeemed. So he's like, I'll do what I can for you, basically.
Dude, fuck.
Yeah. And then Maria comes in.
Oh, she's not an Avenger.
So remember how when she tried to leave the hand castle, she started to die again?
Yeah.
That was a lie. She doesn't need to stay in the hand castle. We find that out here. She can leave anytime she wants.
What?
It was something the priestess did.
Of course.
The best part is the way it starts, because the door opens and he goes, Rogers, just get this over with. And then it's Maria. She's like, no, I certainly won't. Basically, like, oh, shit. So she basically tells him, like, you know, what she said in the last one. You took our kid's name and slaughtered in their name. And he basically said, she tells him, I want a divorce. That's what I was trying to tell you that day in the park. So she makes it official. She's like, since I'm dead, technically, I've already gotten the divorce. Mm-hmm. She's like, with some help from Natasha, I've taken the liberty of dividing all of your assets. Oh. I've sold your safe houses and all their contents. I have my half in cash and several duffel bags waiting in a new car. Your half was donated to various charities this morning in the names of our children, because that's how you honor dead family, Frank, not by using them as an excuse for slaughter.
Holy, oh my fucking God, that's great.
Yeah. And she's like, she basically says, bye, bitch, basically. Like, and she leaves. She said, as for you, when you disappear down whatever abyss they're about to hurl you into, do us all a favor and stay dead. And so the Avengers come to, like, confront him. And they're like, we made the decision. It wasn't unanimous, is what Captain America says. And Frank's like, let me save you some time. And he pulls out the bullets that killed him.
Yeah.
And he does. He uses the little bit of power he has left from the power of the beast.
No.
And unmakes himself.
Wait, what?
Basically, Doctor Strange, they said, is he dead? And he's like, he's no longer on this plane of existence. He's like, the Punisher is no more. He unmade himself.
Whoa.
And then it cuts to a juvenile detention facility, and there's a little blonde kid. And someone's talking to him. Hey, I heard you murdered your parents today. You're planning traps for the police when they came to arrest you, maiming a bunch of them. Me inquires you why you did this. It's like, I don't really know. It was almost like I was what I was born to do. And said, oh, I have one more question for you. Does one of these belong to you?
Oh, shit.
The hand priestess, yeah. Finding another killer. Cuts away from that. And then we find out that Maria's driving away. It shows the duffel bags of money next to her. And on top of there is a pregnancy test. And she's pregnant.
Fuck. Oh, my God.
And it's revealed that instead of dying, Frank Castle was shunted off to Weird World.
Oh, shit. That's awesome.
Where he's saving, like, orphans in this horrible war.
Right. I mean, he's just going to do his own thing in this other type of lawless world. Okay. I mean, that's a cool move, but oh, God damn, that's fucking awesome.
Remember when this run of Punisher began and everybody's like, I'm not going to buy it because the symbol's different. Well, guess what? You missed out on one of the better runs of Punisher I've ever read.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
That was really fucking good. That was awesome.
It's very good. I'm gonna say, and Marvel is basically stating he's gone. The Punisher is no more for now, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's so. I'm curious. Very interesting. Oh, yeah, so very good
move.
God, so good. All right. Next up, one is Doctor Strange 3. Mm. This is such an enjoyable book. written by Jed McKay, art by Pascal Ferry, color by Heather Moore, and letters by Corey Petit, with a backup story at the end by Amy Chu, Tokio Takoro, and a protobunker, Sir Fuentes Suto. This is what they call Parlay Day. And Clea keeps talking to Strange about it. And Parlay Day is a day where Doctor Strange and Dormammu hang out.
Oh, what?
They just spend the day together.
Okay.
Now, the book opens with this normal-looking dude in his house.
It's a PTA conference.
With his wife and his kids, and he's like, I got a promotion. And the kid's like, do you think I'll get a promotion someday, Dad? He goes, if you listen to your mother and say your prayers, I'm sure you will. Well, the promotion is he gets to be the body that Dormammu wears while he hangs out with Stephen Strange. Oh. A body that will burn out in a couple hours. He just sacrifices himself for Dormammu. He's a worshiper of Dormammu.
Oh, shit.
The entire book is them walking around New York, playing chess in the park, just doing all these normal New Yorker things, while talking about all the times they've fought over the years. And it's like the one day they agree not to attack each other. And Stephen agrees to it, first of all, for a day of peace, obviously.
Yeah.
But also to try to talk to Dormammu and, you know, at least try to encourage him not to do evil things. Dormammu does it because he can get a willing person to die in front of Strange and there's nothing Strange can do about it.
Oh, that's so twisted.
Right?
Oh, that's so fucking twisted.
So they end up at the Central Park fountain and he's like, hey, before we go, make a wish, Dormammu. Toss a coin in the fountain. And he's like, I don't really care coinage anymore. He's like, then we must borrow one. He holds a hand out and another green-gloved hand puts a black coin in his hand. It says, here, Stephen. And it's Jean Grey. And it says, this is Jean Grey of the X-Men, a friend of mine who has come to lend me a coin of her people. It's made of Mysterium and negates magic. He's like, I think you're familiar with it from a recent defeat, and talks about the Guardians, the end of the Guardians run. Mm-hmm. He's like, I've been telling you stories all day, Dormammu, stories of how I, just a man, have defeated you, a creature worshipped as God, over and over again. But I wasn't telling them to you. I was telling them to Everett Stone, the man whose soul you're riding, whose life you're ending moment by moment. A man who has a family, a man who blah, blah, blah. You know, he holds out the Mysterium and is like, basically, Everett, take this coin and you'll banish him from your body and get your life back.
Oh.
And so Everett ends up taking control of his body and kicks Dormammu out of his body. So in the end, Strange, the only thing Dormammu wanted to do was kill this guy in front of Strange, and Strange stopped him.
Nice.
And it's like, I love the way they do round, like Jed especially finds ways for Doctor Strange to do things in really roundabout ways, very interesting ways.
Just to keep it interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so really, really good. And then the backup story is they're still dealing with the murder, you know, that might have been done by Clea. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they get mail and Clea's mother is getting married and they have to go to the wedding. Umar, the unrelenting warlord of Antarctica, and Taboro, sorcerer supreme of the sixth dimension, lord of the seething volcano, the spirit of decay. Your presence is demanded at the wedding. So that's fun. They're going to have to go to a wedding. The backup story is Nico Minoru and Doctor Strange.
Yes.
And it's during the original Runaways era where it was her learning how to use the Staff of One, like, well.
Yeah.
And it's her and Doctor Strange teaming up against Dormammu. And she has to, you know, he teaches her, like, okay, if your spells, you know, if each spell only works once, maybe keep a journal as to which spells you've used already. And she's like, oh, good idea. So she started doing it, basically. It's really good. More Nico, please. I love Nico. So, yeah. Great book. But, like, the Dormammu, it's literally like Tuesdays in the Park with Dormammu. I loved it. So, like, yeah. Next up, Captain America, Symbol of Truth, number 13. Two issues left.
Goddamn, okay.
Written by Tochi Onobuchi, art by R.B. Silva, color by Jesus Burdov, and letter by Joe Caramagna. The group, which is Sam and Steve and Sharon and Misty Knight, have fought their way into Dimension Z, and immediately a bomb went off in their faces, basically.
Uh-huh.
Misty's down, not dead, but she's just down. Sharon's hurt. And Steve's just like, all right, well, time to go. And just starts marching towards where Bucky and his son are. And Sam's like, what the fuck? Our people are down. We need to help them. And Steve's just like, they'll be fine. And Sam's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so they actually start arguing and they get into a fight.
Yeah.
And most of the book is them fighting back and forth.
Really hard.
Hurting each other really hard. And talking about Steve being like, you know, like, the people I've lost, you don't understand. Sam's like, I watched my father die in front of me, choking on his own blood. And like, it just gets really intense. And I'm wondering how much a Cold War is about breaking this relationship between them.
Fuck.
And then it cuts to the bad guys where basically Bucky's like, you don't understand. They have to go through this. He's like, this is something they have to, like, again, plans upon plans.
Part of the plan,
plans.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Really good. Two issues left. Let's go. After that, we got some Spidey books, starting with Edge of Spider-Verse 2. Hmm. The first one is Spinstress with David Hine, Luciano Vecchio, mm-hmm. colors by Brian Rebern, letter by Joe Caramagna. Spinstress is the one that's the Disney princess girl.
Okay.
And it's a really great story. It's very fun. So I don't get into too much in the detail, but the other one, the backup story, is Sky Spider, written by Benjamin Percy. Yes, Benjamin Percy. Art by Marika Cresta, colors by Ruth Redman, and letter by Joe Caramagna. This one is like a deep fantasy tale.
Okay.
About these people in this village who were cursed by a witch because they didn't give her hospitality, and all their children over a certain period of time came out mutated and disgusting, and they all died except one, because the mother hit him, and he's Sky Spider. And
oh no,
yeah, he's got little spider legs outside of his body.
Oh god.
And he ends up growing up and becoming Sky Spider. And this design, though, like, let's see if I can get the face to focus.
Oh god.
So he's got the spider eyes.
Yeah.
But he's almost like a Robin Hood kind of character.
Uh-huh.
But like more tortured, obviously. This was a really cool story. I really like this character, actually. This of the Spider-Verse, I was like, I want this one as a mini. I want more of this. So
mm-hmm.
really enjoyed it. Only two stories in this one. So next up, Spider-Man 2099 Dark Genesis. 5 weeks in a row I've gotten a book from this series, and it's over. They put one out every week. Written by Steve Orlando, art by Justin Mason, colored by Antonio Fabella, and letter by Corey Petit. It's the fight against Carnage. It's very much Maximum Carnage, but in 2099, because it's like Spider-Man and Venom have to team up with their friends to defeat Carnage. I'm like, oh, this is familiar, but really cool, actually. In the end, there's a sacrifice that's made. One of the heroes sacrifices himself to stop Carnage. Not going to jump too much into who, but it was really cool. But one of the things they revealed in this that was twisted is Punisher 2099. Like, he's a cyborg, right? Like, he's got a bunch of cybernetic parts.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a really weird, gruesome shot that shows exactly how much of him is still human.
Oh, God.
I'm warning you about this, though.
Let me see.
So.
Oh. Oh, my gosh. Wait, a little higher.
Okay, sorry.
Oh my god. That's so good.
It's literally the head, the lungs, and the digestive tract, and that's
it. The spine, yeah, attached to the spine. Fuck.
Yeah, not even the lower half of his face. His jaw's gone.
That's awesome.
Like, it was gruesome as fuck right in the middle of this book. I'm like, oh, Jesus. Like, so. But, they saved the day, obviously. And it was really cool. I love 2099. I wish they would do more with it. But I'm glad for what I can get. It does say Spider-Man 29 will return. So, next up, Carnage 13. My first issue of Carnage.
because
it's part of the crossover. Written by Alex Pacnadel. Art by Fran Galan. Color by Eric Arcinega. And letter by Joe Sabino. This one focused a lot on Kenneth, the serial killer dude that like worships Carnage.
Yeah.
And this is a joke mostly. I'm not trying to be actually critical, but if artists could stop drawing sexy Carnage, basically he's got the suit that's like half symbiote, half Stark tech.
Mm-hmm.
And when Miles used his powers on him, his electric powers, it fucked up the Stark tech, so he's trying to get it fixed.
Oh,
so
shit.
What does he do? He breaks into Stark Tower and is like, fix me, to people. The Cape Killers, so Scorpion's little crew that now includes Miles, ends up going after him there. And they have a fight, and it's really, really great. Carnage isn't doing great, so he gives Kenneth his greatest desire. He's like, you've been loyal, so here, I'm going to give you this. And he gives him, like, armor of his own, and the guy's like, yes. And it's like, but then he realizes Carnage has complete control over it.
Mm.
And it's like, he's just like, no, I didn't. Basically, Carnage just takes him over. He infects him, essentially, is what happens.
Nice.
So, he sucks anyways, exactly. So, really cool. I think the next part is Red Goblin 5, actually.
Oh, nice.
So we'll see. But it's been a fun little run. Carnage is not one of my favorite characters.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I've enjoyed it. So, all right, let's talk about it. The most controversial book of the week, the book of the week, for good or ill, Amazing Spider-Man number 26.
Damn.
I will start with the creative team, written by Zeb Wells, penciled by John Romita Jr., inked by Scott Hanna, colors by Marcio Maniz and Eric Arcinega, and letter by Joe Caramagna. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. Yes, Kamala Khan is killed in this book.
Yeah.
Which sucks because she's the most prominent Muslim character in Marvel and one of the best young heroes.
Yep.
So I want to quickly throw a few caveats on that, and I'll let Josue give what he wants to say as well. First of all, she's not dead permanently, guys.
Like, right.
There's not a chance of that. And the idea that it is, the idea that this is anything more than a plot point in her story is ridiculous. Like, I'm a firm believer of let it play out. We talked about Punisher earlier. How many people didn't read that series because the symbol was different? You know what I mean? Like, obviously, the image of her dying sucks. I was not a big fan of the way of how this leaked a week early. And
almost two. Yeah. That's so long.
And there was a lot of context taken from two pages.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff that was not in those two pages that made a big difference to me. And I knew there would be.
Yeah.
Because the way they worded things about how she died saving the universe. And I saw a couple people who were like, I thought she just died saving a white girl, you know, and shit like that. So I think there's more to it than that. So let's run down what happened. Basically, the bad guy is like, yo, I'm here. As long as I kill Mary Jane, I'll have the power of a god and I can take over everything. So everybody's trying to prevent that. We find out that Paul is the bad guy's son, which is good because Paul sucks anyways. No one likes Paul. The kids are...
Oh, God.
The kids are basically swept away to the other world because they exist over there. They might not even be real. There was some kind of like weird implication that he wove them into being.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think we'll go into that a little bit further. The Spider-Man, Miss Marvel, Gold Goblin, and Fantastic Four are all fighting. I love the bit with the Fantastic Four. I thought it was really well done how Thing was kind of like a dick at first, but then Reed's like, you're our friend. We're here to help, basically. I'm like, cool. That's the coolest Reed's ever been. So Gold Goblin doing a good thing. There's no sign of anything evil going on there. Long story short, Kamala knows that if MJ dies, the bad guy becomes a god. So she distracts him by using her powers to transform back into MJ, like she used to transform into Carol way back in her origin.
Mm-hmm.
And he kills Kamala instead. Tries to claim his power, and his god is like liar and basically erases him from existence, essentially. So I personally think it is really derivative and really insulting to the character of Miss Marvel to narrow her actions down to died to give a white guy like a tragic story, because it was very much Miss Marvel's story in this issue. It was very much about her. It was very much about her saving the universe and not just a white guy or a white girl. Yes, I get the imagery isn't great, especially because she was transformed into MJ. I don't think they were thinking like, oh, you know, this complicated history she has with wanting to be a white woman. You know what I mean? I don't think that was like
no, it was not
something
like
they thought about. like, but it was kind of like twisted into that, like, oh, is like, but I'm like, no, that's stupid. I thought it's not my favorite run of Amazing Spider-Man, but I thought it was fine. I thought it was a good payoff for the 25 issues we've had. I'm also excited for the future of Ms. Marvel, because obviously she's coming back. She has a movie coming out. Like,
yeah.
And she's going to have a second part of her TV show because it was great. So, again, I'm not taking the death as seriously as some people, because I'm like, it's a comic book. And I get the representation of it all, and that sucks. And it was definitely, shouldn't have done it during the AAPI month, I will tell you that much. but I think, honestly, people are looking at it as a disrespect of Ms. Marvel, and I'm thinking of it more as like, it makes me more excited for her because they're going to do something with her. Like, that, this is literally her getting a spotlight. They'll only kill you if they have a plan for you later, you know? Like, that's exciting to me. So, just saying, I as long as they follow through with that, if they don't, or if they do something really stupid and insulting, then I'll hate it. But I like to let things play out. Also, I'm not a fan of the idea that she comes back as a mutant. That's fucking stupid. So, so Josue, what did you think?
I mean, it's definitely controversial. I think it was just not that I wanted it in some like glorified event. It was just such an odd place to do it and to pull this in not her book, or honestly, let's call it like not anywhere close to her book. She's only kind of been around Peter for like a little bit of a while. And like they're working, they're coworkers, barely. That was just it. Like, it was the weight of it all. It was already just like, the sacrifice was there. It was very much in character. It was just like the weight of it in the end. It was just like, I don't know, it could have been more impactful. I don't know. In the other Spider-Man book where they actually have a relationship, where they actually have a developed relationship. But that book is busy right now. Other than that, I did like the bait and switch, though. It was a callback to that power that she hardly ever uses. And it's just, even she says, I didn't think that would actually work. But yeah, she's just, like, she for sure is like a fucking awesome hero. So far I've enjoyed this issue. She definitely wasn't the one I thought was going to die after all that controversy. But, I mean, before we got spoiled. I'm interested to see where we go from here, because what I don't want from here is that now that Peter's going to be in a dark phase, as he usually goes through. I don't like that it's once again a dark phase with Felicia.
I mean, yeah. I think an underrated moment in this book, and something that's going to be very important the next year, is Norman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Seeing her and realizing that she's Ms. Marvel, and he said she wasn't an intern. Watching me. I think that's the big impact for this book. I think that's going to pay off later on the line. Mm-hmm. That's what I personally think. So, but yeah, I mean, it was fine. It wasn't, again, not my favorite Spider-Man run ever. This isn't even the first time Kamala died. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, mm-hmm. I just think people really overreacted a bit, but you know, it is what it is. In 3 months, when she comes back with a brand new number one and a really cool story, we'll see. So,
yeah.
Yep. All right. Now we're going to go to Krakoa for a very quick trip. X-23 Deadly Regenesis, number 3. Written by Erica Schultz. Art by Edgar Salazar. Color by Carlos Lopez. And letter by Corey Petit. I'll be very brief with this. This is the second book this week with a really uncomfortable amount of torture with somebody in captivity, along with what's for this place from here. Basically with Kimura breaking Laura again to make her one of their killers. So it's brutal. Basically, if X-23 tries to fight back, she just shoots people in the head every time X-23 tries to do it. And she's like, just obey me and I won't kill any more people, basically. Like, it's just like, fucking hell, man, it's brutal. So, but it fits very well in with the early X-23 books, which are amazing. So Deadpool 7. Written by Alyssa Wong, art by Luigi Zagaria, colored by Matt Meehan, letter by Joe Sabino. It's the second half of Deadpool and Valentine Wong's date. They're attacked by two of the assassins in the group that Valentine works for. There's like an extended fight scene, but basically they end up killing them. It's pretty great. Lady Deathstrike is still dog sitting the entire time, and it's very funny. because she falls in love with the dog. And it's like, there's again, the Deadpool text chain is the best Deadpool in Marvel, because it's texting with Lady Deathstrike. He wants her to take a picture when the dog takes a poop so he can make sure that the dog's poop is healthy. And she's like, no, I'm not doing that. And then he's like, he says something along the lines of like, I'm trying to find it. He says, hey, do you want me to add you to the princess's digital photo album? Then you can see all her cute pictures. And then she goes, no. And then 3.5 hours later, she replies, yes. And it shares a link. And it's just like, wait, I'm in this picture. Take it down. Like, so yeah, it's fun. I'm really liking this run. Alyssa Wong is a really good Deadpool writer. So great times. Final book is Betsy Braddock, Captain America, number 4.
Captain Britain.
Or Captain Britain. Captain America, didn't I? Blah. It's the last book. Give me some wiggle room. Written by Teenie Howard. Art by Vasco Georgiev. Color by Eric Arcinaga. And letter by Ariana Mayer. It's continuing the story where she's trying to stop the false Captain Britons, the Furies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. She has to team up with the Avengers. She has a sword fight with Tony Stark and immediately destroys him. And he's just like talking shit. She's like, I would have kicked your ass so hard. You have no idea. Basically, it was great. Lots of cute little moments with her and Rachel. They go to they go to a charity gala together and they're like, who's your friend? She's like, this is my girlfriend. And like very much introduces her. I'm like, hell yeah, it's my girl. There's a great, really great part where the entire Braddock family is making a plan of what to do next. And Brian's little daughter, the cute little girl, she's the one leading the strategy session. So she's like, so we go here. And she's like moving things on the table. And so it's really cute. Lots of Jamie in it. Jamie's really funny always because he's just insane. Great book. I just really am enjoying this Captain Britain run. It's really good. So, and that is the final book of the week. Josue, what else have you been reading?
Honestly, I have not gotten a chance to actually sit down and thoroughly read a couple of pages to actually talk about. I've been struggling to finish this one book, but when I get to it, it's I've been enjoying it. It's nothing against the book. I just want to get more through before I actually talk about anything I can actually get my hands on.
I gotcha, totally. So, well, I got a couple of things. I went thrift shopping on Memorial Day weekend at Half Price Books, and I picked up a couple of things, including Put the Book Back on the Shelf, which is a Belle and Sebastian anthology. All the stories are based on one of their songs. It's really great. It's a bunch of people, like a bunch of indie people that I don't know. And I was very excited to see all these names. And then right there, dead center in the middle, Rick Remender just randomly does a story in this. And it's just amazing. So I love this. Belle and Sebastian are great. They're a good band for this kind of thing. And I recommend it. I didn't know this even existed. There's also Ramon Perez, but not Ramon K. Perez. I want to make that clear. So, yeah. Next up is a surprise book for me. And this is something I want you to keep your eye out for. It's called Alice from Dream to Dream. This is a boombox graphic novel. And it's from Giulio Macchioni and Giulia Andragna. And it's a story about this like 14-ish year old girl who discovers that if she sleeps in the same room as someone, she enters their dreams.
That's dope.
And she's forced to share a bedroom because her family's low on money. She's forced to share a bedroom with her brother who watches horror movies. And so all his dreams are horror movies. She can't get to sleep. And it's also dealing with this whole like thing with her best friend at school, and he's like a cute guy and all the girls like him, but they hate her and they bully her, and they bully her very heavily, and it's really uncomfortable at times. And it's also dealing with the fact that they have an attic in their house, but the mom is like, you can't sleep in the attic though. And you find out why, because like the mom's sister either disappeared or died a long time ago, and this was her room, so she doesn't want to take anything down. It becomes a whole thing. But it's really well told. It's really interesting. The art is just really, really nice. And it's very boombox. Like, it's up there with any boombox thing I've read. I really, really liked it. So, high recommend. High recommend. Once again, Alice from Dream to Dream. And it's one of those little kind of like mini boombox books. It's not like the same size as a normal graphic novel. It's a little shorter. So, yeah, really good. I got it for like $3, which is great. The only other things I have are two I haven't read yet. Iron Fist. This is the Kari Andrews run.
Dope.
This is volume two. So I don't have volume one yet. So I haven't dug into it because I want to get volume one first. Mm-hmm. Or at least read it first. But I'm excited because all Iron Fist is good. And my next big read, Blankets by Craig Thompson.
Ah, nice.
Look at this bitch.
Yeah,
it's so big. I flipped through it a little bit just to get an idea. I'm very excited about it. It's a huge Eisner winner. You know, it won a ton of Eisners. And yeah, I'm really excited about reading it. So that's my next read. Hopefully I'll have it done by the next episode. But I was struggling to get everything read for the book or for the series. Or the show. So I didn't get a chance to read it. So yeah. And that's it. Other than that, I was just reading some D&D stuff and settling into my new house. So,
hell yeah.
Yep, those are the issues that we had this week. Make sure to check us out on Twitter. You can find me at WHI Podcast Keith. You can find our producer Liz at WHI Podcast Liz. You can find Josue at Josue Reads Josue. You can find this show at WHI Podcast on Twitter. Don't forget to follow us on there. You will get an announcement every time a new episode comes out. This should usually be on a Saturday morning. You'll get a link to the episode, timestamps for each publisher, as well as a complete list of all the books being reviewed. It's the best way to keep track of what we're doing. Also follow our other show, Jukebox Vertigo, at Jukebox Vertigo on Twitter. That is our musical playlist building show where every other week we build a playlist based on a randomized category with our co-host Amanda and some of our friends and special guests. The next episode that will come out, which will come out this Monday, is Ladies of the 80s, which we had a lot of fun. And an old standby and one of our favorite guests was able to make it. And very excited to check that out. So make sure to check that episode out. Once again, it should come out on Monday. Now, you'll know when it comes out if you follow us on Twitter at Jukebox Vertigo. If you follow us on there, you'll get an announcement when it does. You'll also be told when Josue is going to be doing the listen party for the episode where he listens to every song that is added. Right now, we're kind of in flux with scheduling for that, so following us on Twitter is the best way to figure out when that's going to happen. So once again, at Jukebox Vertigo. And on Twitch, you can find Josue at Josue Plays Josue for that listen party. I believe that is going to be... Oh, also, follow us or follow Certain POV on Twitter. That is our network for Jukebox Vertigo. And join the Certain POV Discord. We have a lot of fun in there. Right now, we're talking a lot about Dungeons & Dragons. We're talking a lot about music and, of course, Pride, because we love Pride and we're celebrating it quite a bit. So make sure to join us on there as well. Do not forget to bag, board, and box your new treasures, and we'll see you next week with a new batch of beautiful books. Stay safe and read more comics.
Hey, Nerf Herders.
You sure you want to go with that?
Hey, everyone?
There we go. More inviting.
Have you ever had a movie that you really wanted to love, but something holds you back?
Or one that you did love in spite of a flaw?
Well, I'm Case Aiken.
And I'm Sam Alisea.
And on Another Pass, we sit down with cool guests to look at movies that we find fascinating.
But flawed.
And we try to imagine what could have been done when they were made to give them that little push.
We're not experts. We just believe in criticism.
Constructive criticism.
Sure.
So come take another pass at some movies with us.
And every now and then, we can celebrate movies that did it on their own, too.
You can find us at CertainPOV.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pass it on.